Welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Mike Gooley Jr. on one side. We got L. Duncan on the other side. And we have a lot of topics to discuss. Let's go.
Should we praise Baylor or crush Gonzaga for being frauds?
All right, guys, you remember the Super Bowl. It was just a couple of minutes ago, and I remember when they put up the Chiefs' offensive line and the only person I recognized was Mike Remmers. I was like, oh, my prediction is all the way wrong. That happened last night in the national championship game. It was only after a couple of buckets that I realized, oh, man, one of these teams is going to beat the brakes off the other, and it was Baylor beating Gonzaga. And why was Baylor going to beat the brakes off of them? Because it looked like Baylor does push-ups and Gonzaga does Pilates. Like, somebody going to need to put something in that weight room in Spokane, because what happened was just physical domination. They were bigger, they were stronger, they were faster. The height thing didn't matter at all. It was just a matter of Baylor can get to the basket whenever they wanted to, and Gonzaga could not. Now, did that make Gonzaga frauds? No, they won five games in this tournament, right? Like, he ran through a lot of good teams before they got to the West Coast Conference schedule. They had a great season. But Baylor, with a coach that I've had the hardest time admitting might actually be good, then I heard last night he's been on the job for 18 years, and maybe Scott Drew has learned how to coach, because after 18 years, damn, I would hope that you have. But this is not an indictment on Gonzaga. This is about Baylor, man. They were really, really good and ran through this tournament, maybe as good in this tournament as any team we've seen since like 2009 North Carolina.
Yeah, it's funny, Bo, because to your point, Gonzaga was not frauds. They had three All-Americans. They were 31-0. Like, you don't do that because you are frauds. But my dad comes over this morning and says, I'm watching that game, and it's like watching an NBA team versus a college team. I said, no. This is like watching what would happen if you released, like, dogs at the Westminster dog show, because there is a huge difference between dogs and dogs, and we clearly saw that. It feels like, though, a lot of people are really surprised. I'm not going to gloat and toot my own horn, but I saw this coming, because throw away all the intangibles and the analytics. I know better than anyone, as someone that's from Atlanta, some teams are just destined to lose, and that is Gonzaga and Mark Few, because no matter how many times they've been in this position, they find a way to not finish and close the deal. But we could have seen this coming, fella, because what did Baylor do yesterday? They did three things really well. They were number one in Division One in 3 points. That's what they did really well. They were fifth in D1 and second chance possessions. That's what they did really well last night. And lastly, they got over 21 points from their bench. It's the best contribution that we've seen from a championship. They were just a better team, and we were robbed of the opportunity to scout how good they could be against each other because of the COVID postponement back in December. But please rest assured, this had nothing to do with the Zags and everything to do with Baylor just being some dogs.
Yeah, can confirm on that one. The physical mismatch was evident the minute everyone walked off the bus in that spot. And I'll give credit to you and Monica McNutt. I saw her on Around the Horn. Kind of give credit to what we saw happen in the Final Four, because we all focused on Jalen Suggs and the emotional turnaround and all that spot. I'm focusing on the fact that Baylor essentially got to take the night off because they beat the absolute hell out of Houston in that semifinal matchup and got to spend most of the rest of that game coasting, walking into this one fresh and ready to go. Bomani, I figured this would be a victory for you, and the zone is for cowards, Drew, here, because this Baylor team was strapping guys up all day, all over this place. But of course, we cannot rip Gonzaga, because who would want to tear down a private Catholic institution who had a phenomenal undefeated season, a magical ride through the course of their regular season, and then just happened to get blown out in a championship setting by a team that was a bit physically superior? I don't know what about that would drive so many people to want to make it about Gonzaga in that spot when it's about the journey and not the destination. And I feel like more people need to acknowledge that.
Yeah, shout out to that guy that played for Notre Dame when they got the brakes beat off of them by Alabama. But let's bring this to L, who just keeps banging on Gonzaga like it's not Gonzaga. Like, the fact that they even get as far as they do isn't wildly amazing. No, they just find a way to lose. No, they find a way to win a whole lot. And this time they came up against a better team. But I want you to say dogs again. Say dogs again.
Dogs.
Okay, that reminds me of something that you said that your husband said about you. Look like Faith Evans, sound like Faith Hill. Say dogs. Okay. Say that dogs thing.
Dogs.
Yeah. Good try.
What are you supposed to say? Some dogs.
I don't know how it's supposed to sound, but that one. I was like, what are you talking? Oh, that's what she's doing. It's just the Faith Hill part.
Do you think Sam Darnold can turn it around now that he's not on the Jets?
Okay. I live in New York, right? Which leads to this unfortunate circumstance where you turn on your TV and it's New York teams on. Sometimes they make you watch both of them at the same time. What this means is I have actually had the occasion to watch Sam Darnold play football a couple of times. And my question for all of you who think that this thing is going to work because all he needs to do is get away from the Jets, what have you seen from him to indicate that he is a good NFL quarterback? Now, what you're going to have people say is he was stuck with Adam Gase. Look what happened when Ryan Tannehill got away from Adam Gase. Quiet as it's kept, Ryan Tannehill's improvement started when Adam Gase was there, and Ryan Tannehill, at his worst, was never anywhere near as bad as Sam Darnold has been at his best. So maybe this will work out for the Panthers. I get why they would try, because physically the dude has all the tools, but we know what it looks like when a dude is good and just in a bad situation, and that is not what Sam Darnold looks like. In fact, I don't see a plausible argument that Sam Darnold is better than Teddy Bridgewater, and they are done with Teddy Bridgewater in Charlotte. No, I am not buying that this thing is going to turn around. And if they don't take a quarterback in the first round, if one is available when it slides down, they are committing malpractice. Because Sam Darnold, if he was the answer, you couldn't get him for a 2, a 4, and a 6.
Yeah, Bo, I'm with you in the fact that Sam Darnold is not better than Teddy Bridgewater right now, but we know that's not the bet in this situation. This is, remember, a very hyper-aggressive owner in David Tepper, who I'm sure is looking at the upside, the tools, and that one attached to his draft status, because that's going to allow him to walk into these situations forever and operate in a different spot, especially when it's not only Adam Gase, but it's the stench of the entire Jets organization that most people, especially NFL coaches, have the hubris to say, I can wash that off. And Joe Brady is one of those guys that's on the cusp of being an NFL offensive coordinator that we give that kind of like McVay, Shanahan, Kingmaker syndrome to in these spots. And so for Sam Darnold, this is going to be his best shot. Like, we'll know very quickly whether or not there's anything they can tap into here, albeit he's going into a situation that still needs O-line help in the way that he lacked in the Jets for so many years. But I look at this spot for them and say, this is an understandable gamble for me only because you signed Matt Rhule to a 7-year contract. And so nothing that happens in the next 2 years with Sam Darnold to me is irreversible if you've committed to that kind of timeline, knowing it was going to take longer, knowing it was going to be something that was more akin to what we thought the Dolphins were going to be than any of the traditional hires that we see in that spot. So I think because of that timeline, they're in a position to take a risk right here that's a little more of a risk when that fifth-year option starts to come into play, but that still has a 2-year timeline to it that I don't think is as damning given what they've shelled out for their coach.
It's not a risk. They had to do something. They knew they couldn't stand Pat. They were in on Matt Stafford sweepstakes. They didn't get him. They were supposedly very interested in Deshaun Watson. Obviously, all of that has changed over the last few weeks. And they realized they weren't going to be able to move up in the draft, potentially have to try to make a deal with their division rival Falcons to move up in the draft and get someone. So they had to do something. This, to me, sort of reeks of big college energy. Because you know Sam Darnold is not a franchise quarterback. And if you can't get one, you must be making this move because you believe in, like, culture and that culture can change. And that seems like a very Matt Rhule college type of thing right now, right? All this talk about Joe Brady. I'm not saying that he's not an upgrade from Adam Gase. I'm just saying we are using the exact same formula to diagnose him a really great coordinator as we did Adam Gase. So Joe Brady had one good year with Joe Burrow. Adam Gase has made a living off of one average year with Jay Cutler in Chicago and landed in Miami and New York and who knows where else because of it. So again, I feel like we're sort of using this barometer on Sam Darnold. Look, at the end of the day, he's okay. His career completion rate's below 60%. He's thrown 39 interceptions. He fumbles the ball 20 times since he was drafted. But the biggest thing to me with all of this is that the talent evaluations for quarterbacks between 2016 and 18 were pretty bad. We had 5 quarterbacks taken in the top 3 in that span, and 4 of them are with new teams. Only Baker Mayfield is still even with his team. Sam Darnold, just another long line of the Winces and Goffs of the world.
Up next on HQ.
Why not draft one of these guys who probably needs to sit a year because Matt Ryan's not going anywhere this year and allow him the time to learn, if you will, and then move on next year?
Should the Falcons draft a QB at 4 or trade down and build around Matt Ryan?
All right, so we had this from Adam Schefter that the Falcons are thinking about moving out of the 4th pick in the draft, which given the haul that the 49ers got for the 3rd pick, seems to make sense because you could stack up some assets, but their quarterback is old. Right. If there is a quarterback that they like and he is still there at the 4th pick in the draft, it would be malpractice for the Falcons to not make that move. Keep in mind, Julio Jones is going to be going into his 11th year in the league. A lot of the things that we think of as steady for the Falcons, It's about time for change. The future is beginning, and it would be insane to me if the Atlanta Falcons have local product Justin Fields drop to them, and they decide, no, we're going to move out of this pick. I don't think that's a guy that you're going to afford to pass up on if you are them, but there is going to be a long line of teams that will probably be interested in moving up to get that pick if they are there. There's a good chance they will move out of it. I won't blame them necessarily if they do, but if there's a quarterback that they like there, they'll be fools not to take them.
And I think that's just it. You got to really know that's your guy. But if not, I'm completely with you, Bo. I think moving back, moving down, and understanding, all right, we're going to see all these quarterbacks go early, which means if you're still in top 10 range, you're talking about potentially one of the four big weapons in this draft when it comes to the three wideouts, Devonta Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, and Jalen Waddle, or Kyle Pitts. And so you could stack that in that offense and put some cash in your pocket here. The interesting thing to me is going to be which of these teams decides that they're going to be in that sweepstakes to Dusko. All signs should point to the Denver Broncos. Drew Lock not getting it done in an offense and a team really that seems ready in a ton of other places right now. And I'm really just saying this out loud to beg the Broncos to go ahead and do this so that the New England Patriots don't find some way to get a third team involved in all this and work their way up from 15 to 4 and have the dynasty reign yet again in all of this. So the rest of the NFL needs to step up, because if you give Bill Belichick a crack, you've seen he's been doing abnormal things this offseason for the Patriots, because they have to come at this like everybody else in the NFL now, not the Patriots that had Tom Brady. And so if Atlanta's going to move down, which I expect they will, I would imagine they'd like to stay in that top 10. Denver makes a ton of sense. Just do it and save the rest of us.
This is a complicated subject for me, because what's good for the goose being the Falcons in this situation, is also good for the gander being my beloved Broncos. Because while I am from Atlanta, I'm actually a Broncos fan. Most people do know that. I have been in on the Matt Ryan is overrated train for many, many years. And whenever someone inevitably hits me with the, oh, but the 2016 MVP season, that was a blip. It was an anomaly. The man hasn't even made a Pro Bowl since then, since Kyle Shanahan left. Let's move on. In fact, I've been saying for Arthur Blank, he needs to have been planning for his future years ago. It is so past too late. They've been rolling the dice with Matt Schaub as their backup for the last 5+ seasons. They are committing over $92 million in dead cap space for a quarterback that has helped them to 18 wins in 3 seasons. This is so far past what the Falcons should have been doing. So at this point, why not draft one of these guys who probably needs to sit a year, because Matt Ryan's not going anywhere this year, and allow him the time to learn, if you will, and then move on next year. You've got to put butts in the seats, because you have got to make it make sense that you spent billions of dollars on a stadium downtown, and you have absolutely no path to a future. You've got to give the fans something to be hopeful for. If you trade out of this, what are they hopeful for? More of the same.
Did UNC make the right hire in Hubert Davis?
All right, here's one of those time fly sorts of situations. When Hubert Davis got that job in North Carolina, the idea was that he would ultimately be Roy Williams' successor. And I'd been thinking, like, man, has it been enough time for him to be ready for that? He did that 9 years ago. It's been 9 years since he left ESPN and when he took that job. Now, is he the right hire? None of us really have any idea, and we are ultimately going to see. But this is a significant hire for them to hire a black man to be the head of that program. Like, this is one of the two crown jewel programs in the history of college basketball. It's them and Kentucky. For Hubert to be the guy out front at that job, yeah, that's big, but like, even when he was on TV, I never got the feeling that we were dealing with the most dynamic personality in the world with Hubert Davis. And I don't even necessarily know how much that matters. I don't know how well he ultimately is going to recruit. But I did think it was important for that program to have somebody who was of that program to continue what it was they were doing and understood what it was about in order to keep this rolling. So this is as good a choice as any, I think, as the guy to lead it. The lack of head coaching experience, I don't even think that's that big of a deal. I think they did a good one, considering this was probably the plan for the last 9 years.
Yeah, Bo, we all know charisma at the head coaching position is super important. Look no further than Durham, right? Coach K, that guy's a stand-up comedian and in the waiting. Now, look, none of these talking heads are going to be able to tell you whether that was a good move or not. So I sort of defaulted to the people I know inside the program and reached out to my connects. And I said, what do you think about this move, and they loved the move. North Carolina, for the last 70 years, has always hired within the program because tradition is incredibly important to UNC, and that's exactly how it was relayed to me, is that Hubert's a guy who's well-beloved, well-liked with alum, is going to do great with parents in terms of recruiting, and they feel like this was the right move. It just so happens that he's also Black, and so that's the cherry on top of the cake, but that this was well-earned and well-deserved and something that he certainly should have. Now, they did mention his lack of experience and noted that he'll probably hire really great staff around him, but I think you should look no further than the fact that the recruits that they had, two of their top recruits, have decided they're going to stay with UNC despite Roy Williams leaving, and I caution this for anyone that starts doing the, grumbling. Roy Williams, when he took that job, when UNC's program was bad, he had three All-Americans that he had inherited, which is why within 2 years, he had won a national championship. Hubert's inheriting zero. In fact, UNC hasn't had any All-Americans since 2017. They're in a very different position, but I think that he's definitely set up to win, and he at least has the full support of the UNC family, which is important in these matters.
Yeah, and I think all of those things certainly factor into it and are great points. The thing I would say I'm most interested in is what we heard Roy Williams very openly griping about in his retirement press conference, which is all the changes that are coming in college athletics that I feel like you could say would be in better hands of someone in Hubert's spot, someone who is, as I heard described, a younger 50 and maybe more willing to adapt to these things. Roy Williams had more one-and-dones in the last 2 years than he had in the prior 15 seasons. He saw the writing on the wall with that, the way that the transfer portal is changing things, and the way that name, image, and likeness are going to change the face of all of this. And so I think having someone who is not so firmly entrenched in their head coaching patterns and ways might be an actual upside when it comes to all the things that right, wrong, or indifferent you're going to have to juggle now around big-time college athletics jobs, especially at a place like North Carolina.
Do you question if this is a useful range session?
All right, this is Bryson DeChambeau. Y'all strong and everything like that. Be hitting the golf ball real hard. Anyway, let's look at him at the range, hitting the balls hard and fast. He hit that damn thing 210 miles an hour. By the way, I can't wait for some reporter to come up and ask him and everybody else if they should have moved the Masters out of Georgia because of that voting bill.
Gonna be waiting a while.
Hell yeah. Oh yeah.
The best is, look at Vijay Singh. He doesn't know what to do. He just keeps snickering. He's like, well, how is this helpful? What is this for?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that other dudes on the tour don't look at this cat like he's ridiculous, largely because they're hating.
Yeah. This, to me, looked a lot like the last time I was at one of those, like, kids' entertainment centers, and they had a batting cage, and I'm, like, pulling the stroller, and I see the young guy sort of snickering at me, so I grabbed a bat to prove I still got it and was acting like this in the batting cage. Like, that's legit what it looked like. 90 mile per hour, whiff, still got it in heels. It's like he's trying to show off.
That's better than I would have done in that particular instance. Although this particular instance looks like me 5 beers deep on the back nine on that one hole where we all take two off the tee, and I inevitably add to all of the already horrific things going on in my lower back thanks to football.
Well, no, I was about to say, there are times where I'm out playing golf and I hit the ball fast like that over and over again. Why? Because I'm so damn mad. That's why. Fine. Hit them all into the trees. I don't care. I ain't got no more balls left anyway.
In syndication, Jeopardy.
All right. So, you know, Jeopardy's rotating around the host, and Aaron Rodgers started his stint. Let's get a look at what's going on there.
Over to our two-day champion on the end. Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose 0. Thank you for that.
It was a fair question. I do have to note this. Now, we also have some behind the scenes with Aaron Rodgers after his first day.
I can see on the podium, and I was like, please put something about the field goal on there. You will always be all time in my book, my friend. My first show, and that's what you said at the end. Thank you.
The only reason y'all are saying he was good at this is because he's Aaron Rodgers. He sounded really, really boring like that.
Yes.
Like anybody else does not get called back for another day sounding all sleepy like that. Elle, are you intrigued?
Yo, like, Twitter would have you believe that he had just orchestrated like the greatest like Jeopardy episode of all time. They're like, is there nothing this man's not good at? Yes. hosting Jeopardy. Like, it was super boring. My favorite part of that clip, though, Bo and Gojo, is like the sort of uncomfortable laugh out of the nerdy crowd that undoubtedly did not know what that dude was talking about when he was very specific about the field goal. They're like, is this the thing that's funny?
Yeah. Gojo.
I am actually intrigued because I think what we're forgetting here is this is the first go-around. Yeah, I know he's on the Celebrity Jeopardy as a contestant in that spot, but what I'll say is they're banking on the Aaron Rodgers that we hear about in football, because the one thing, and I've talked to dudes that play defense for the Packers, is in practice, when you're going against Aaron Rodgers, you are public enemy number one, and that guy is going to cut you down every chance that he gets. And when he does it with that wry sense of humor, they see on the field and behind the scenes the potential for that Alex Trebek-like ability to cut folks down in there, because Trebek, among other things, was so great at belittling contestants on that show that I know Rodgers has that potential.
All right, that is our show. Check out L. Duncan, 6 o'clock Sports Center, Mike Golic Jr., Chinay and Golic, 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. You guys have fun.
We also did get an Instagram Live with him and Shailene Woodley after that last night.
Oh, nice. She needs to teach him how to act like he has a personality.